Let me introduce you now to the first of the really great prophets of Israel. I say he's a prophet, but in fact he looks rather like Gandalf, I think, the good wizard from the Lord of the Rings. There's more than a touch of the magical, a touch of the wizard about the prophet we know as Elijah. Now, like Gandalf, we know almost nothing of his background. He's called a Tishbite, but we're not sure what Tishbites were. He bursts onto the scene as a prophetic leader. He's a leader of a band, and they must have been a band of rough and ready prophets, but they're called the Sons of the Prophets, these wild men who leap out of nowhere and stand eyeball to eyeball with the king above all. And this was Elijah's role. Elijah stood eyeball to eyeball with Ahab, and even more particularly in some ways with Ahab's extraordinary wife, Queen Jezebel. Elijah stands up as the defender of the God-given identity of Israel, which was a community of slaves set free. And what he says to Ahab and to Jezebel is, "You are taking us back to Egypt. You are leading the people back to slavery because you're undermining the God-given identity of our people." Now, the man is miraculously cared for by God, the God who has called him to this task. He's fed by ravens, for instance, in a time of famine, not unlike St. Benedict up there at Subiaco. He also has miraculous powers. He feeds the widow of Zarephath when she has nothing to eat. He even raises her son from the dead. He seems to have got on very well with the widow of Zarephath, who offered him accommodation. He also calls down lightning regularly to consume his opponents. In fact, he's rather a dangerous man who seems always to be calling down fire. And this is because in the Bible, the holy is always dangerous. Handle with care. And this was certainly the case with Elijah. Cross his path and you pay a fierce price. This fierce character who can call down fire is also the man who in the cave can listen to the voice of God that is not in the great fire or the ferocious wind or the great earthquake, but who can hear what the Hebrew text calls the voice of a thin silence and know that it's the voice of God. So he's a man who can listen to the silence as well as call down the fire. Eventually, at the end of his long and stormy prophetic career, during which, I might add, he wrote absolutely nothing, not a word, but at the end of this long and stormy career, we're told, he's carried up to heaven in a whirlwind. The chariot of fire, we're told, arrives from nowhere, and into the chariot of fire gets the prophet Elijah, and he's carried up to heaven, leaving only his cloak. His magic cloak, as it were, because he could strike the river Jordan with his cloak and it parted, like Moses at the Red Sea. He leaves his magic cloak to his successor and, in many ways, his son, the prophet Elisha. The tradition then is that he never died, and from this there came the tradition that he would return one day. And in fact, he's found on page after page of the New Testament, there next to Jesus. On the mountain of Tabor at the Transfiguration, we find the prophet Elijah with Moses talking to Jesus. There was a tradition that he would return before the Messiah came, before the great day of the Lord that the Messiah would bring. And some people said, well, is John the Baptist Elijah? And there were even people who said, well, perhaps Jesus is Elijah. In fact, he remains the great first prophet. In some ways, he's the archetype of the prophet who could stand up to the powers that be and speak with the fire of God. So, if walking down the Via della Conciliazione you see a fiery chariot coming towards you, you know that it's probably the prophet Elijah and that the day of the Lord is at hand.